in this day and age, what does queer cinema kind of encompass? How can we kind of define queer cinema?
Well, yeah, I think it's a good question, and it has to do with a variety of kind of possible approaches to the topic. So the obvious thing is, you know, films that are about you know, issues or subjects that are considered relevant to the queer community, to the LGBT plus community. So, for example, had the 1991 documentary Paris is Burning, which is, you know, an amazing film about the New York kind of drag scene, for example, or Greg Araki's The Living End, which is about a couple of young men living with AIDS, made in 1992. So that's kind of the obvious spotter is films that are about issues, you know, that fit in with kind of queer. A queer concept, but the other kind of aspect that I actually think is a bit more interesting is this reconsideration of kind of underground and a certain strain of kind of camp independent cinema and a reimagining of that and a reconsideration of that. For example, some of Andy Warhol's films from the 1960s. Things like, I know Flash Gordon, the Mike Hodges film, is often spoken about in kind of queer cinema discourse. So it's not necessarily just that the subject fits, you know, in terms of the theme. It's also about the kind of aesthetics of the work, having a kind of camp aesthetic.
It's really interesting to see it encompassing more and more of that sort of attitude, because I think queer cinema has this reputation as all of the films have to be about how miserable queer life is. They have to all be about AIDS or discrimination or all this kind of thing, and really doesn't encapsulate a full experience. It's got this kind of reputation as kind of always going dark.
No, exactly. I mean, I know Spartacus, for example, has been recuperated or reconsidered in terms of kind of queer cinema as a coded version or as offering a coded vision of kind of sexuality. So, you know, it covers a whole variety of things, the term, you know, everything from, yeah, something like Spartacus to Two Moon Junction. You know, there's a whole variety of things that can fit under the category.
Well, in terms of recommendations, as we say, June is Pride Month. In terms of some recommendations for films that might suit the month and sort of suit people's watching this month, what might you recommend?
I'm going to recommend one that I absolutely love. I said it on film studies courses that I do regularly, and it has quite a reputation. It's David Lynch's favorite film, the filmmaker David Lynch, and it's generally considered to be one of the worst films ever made, but I actually think it's brilliant, and that's Ed Wood's film Glen or Glenda.
Mm.
Have you heard of that?
I have indeed, yes.
Yeah, Glen or Glenda. Have you seen it?
I have seen, I don't think I've sat down and watched the entire film. I've certainly seen some parts of it, but Ed Wood sort of being who he is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of beautiful film, and I remember watching it with a student who identified as queer quite recently, actually, like only in the last couple of years, and that student saying that, you know, despite how hokey it is and all of those aspects and the strangeness of the whole thing, this student actually found it quite beautiful. In its representation of the experience of being, you know, transvestite or transsexual, or both in Glen or Glenda, it's about both, and you know, within that context of the kind of 1950s when the film was made. So I think Glen or Glenda's amazing. There are amazingly kind of strange parts in it. You know, there's a cutaway shot of a heater at one point that doesn't seem to have any motivation. There's recycled footage of the LA freeways. There's Bela Lugosi speaking like some kind of mad scientist, and you don't really understand the position of Bela Lugosi in the film. But at the same time, it has some really, because it's so unhinged, it has some really arresting kind of moments and arresting sequences. So I actually think it's quite a good film to sit down and watch. And it's only about an hour, so it's not too long. Mm. And, you know, it's going to be unlike anything that most people have ever seen. And you know, as long as you persevere with it, it's pretty rewarding.
And were there any films that have sort of come out this year or, I mean, given the sort of state of cinema in the last couple of years that you might recommend?
Oh, I'd have to kind of think about what ones, 21st century. Oh, Blue is the Warmest Color. I like that film. Mm. You know, it won the kind of Palme d'Or at Cannes in 2013. Have you got any other kind of titles that you can think of that are recent?
Not in my sort of mind. Certainly I was doing Queer Screen, couldn't have been last year because of the pandemic, but the year previously, and there were some great films that came out of that. I remember there was one particular one that was sort of shot on an iPhone, entirely shot within an iPhone for the documentary format. Yep. There was, some great films that came out of the festival that year.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that was on at the Sydney Film Festival as well, that iPhone one. Mm. So there's plenty of stuff around. I mean, I guess it's always an interesting looking at kind of bigger and more mainstream ones like Blue is the Warmest Color versus films that have kind of specifically been made to be released, you know, almost exclusively to a kind of queer identifying audience, and that's also a kind of interesting tension or path that you can kind of investigate if you're interested in queer cinema is that the kind of films that were released in the 2000s to really, I suppose, what you'd say, cash in on the pink dollar or whatever you want to call it, but a whole kind of strand of films that came out you know, released by queer film companies that weren't even necessarily that were often just genre films but with a kind of queer bent. Mm. Which is, you know, interesting phenomenon as well.
Well, Ari, do appreciate your time on this one. Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks. See you later.